across Northern Ireland, on your radio, and on BBC Sounds. This is The Stephen Nolan Show!
So we broke the news this morning that the chief exec of Commonwealth Games Northern Ireland has gone to the police, he tells us, because of concerns for his safety. Commonwealth Games NI also telling us they've had to close an office pending a security assessment. This after the interview Conall Heatley gave to the newsletter in which he asked Stormont to contemplate coming up with a new flag with which all athletes could feel represents them. You know what happens when we discuss flags in Northern Ireland, and it happened on the Nolan Show this morning. The Stephen Nolan Show! Good morning, everyone. So here we were just yesterday morning talking about problems at the maternity hospital, and now it emerged yesterday afternoon that there's yet another problem. Have a listen to the Health Minister, Mike Nesbitt.
The new issue is with a medical gas pipework. But I am told that the scale is limited. However, I remain entirely dissatisfied that a new issue has emerged, and particularly dissatisfied that I only learned about it today. So, Principal Deputy Speaker, let me assure the House that I will be requiring further analysis of this issue with the medical gas pipework and further assurances about the fix.
Well, our health correspondent, Mary-Louise Connolly, with us this morning. Morning, Mary-Louise.
Morning.
Good morning, good morning. So this is, what, 10 years behind schedule, the hospital at the site? And here's another problem.
That's right, Stephen. It is hard to believe that something could be almost 10 years out of date, but it is. And this latest problem, it affects, we understand, a small part of the building. It's medical gas pipes, which are extremely important within a hospital. But what we have found in the past, and there is form here, when you look back to the critical care building, that building has actually been referred to as the forgotten building. That was the 12-storey state-of-the-art building that finally opened its doors in 2019. What happened whenever it had to be ripped apart was that additional costs were incurred because so many other things had become out of date. So now we have the maternity building, which is separate from the critical care building, and it's got a whole litany of problems as well. And as we heard yesterday from Diane Dodds from the DUP, questions are being asked. What lessons are being learned within the Belfast Health Trust? Because there is form here when you look back at what happened at the critical care building.
So that maternity building, the new building that is supposed to be open, what can it be doing that we're not already getting from the old building, the old maternity services? In other words, what are we missing out on?
Well, it's really the quality of environment. Stephen, I'm not sure if you've had any reason to call down to the maternity building. I have, and the building is really in need of a lot of repair. And they haven't been updating or repairing it over the past 10 years, because there has been waiting in the wings this brand spanking new maternity hospital that they've been on a promise for so long. The old building is old. There are too many beds in wards. It is dilapidated, and it has been very difficult for women who have been had their babies there, but also for the staff who've had to work in very cramped environment. So this brand new building, you know, from the outside, Stephen, it looks fabulous. It's five floors. It is brand new. It's sparkling. There would be more beds. There's a neonatal unit for sick babies. You know, it's what you get with a new building. Of course, a lot more than shiny new corridors and freshly painted walls. But, you know, equipment, better laid out equipment, more space between beds, rooms, all of those things that come with a brand new build, and something that Northern Ireland and Belfast needed 10 years ago.
And finally, Mary-Louise, many people in small and indeed big private business in Northern Ireland, be it small, medium, big business, they just can't fathom getting away with a 10-year delay. That's right. And they will wonder, is Stormont in some type of bubble?
Well, it's okay. People will argue, and the Department of Health and Mike Nesbitt and the executive argue that they haven't been up and running for those 10 years. You know, we also had the pandemic, but this does go back to 2010, whenever the maternity building, and under Chris McGimpsey, health minister then, you know, that's how far that we go back. In fact, it was even mentioned in 2005. So questions that are being asked now is, where is the accountability? Who was involved, who is responsible for accepting the building when any new building is finished? There is a handover. So who within the Belfast Health Trust was responsible for accepting that building when the contractors handed it over? And on what terms and on what reports was that acceptance based? You know, also there's going to be a new repair cost to the maternity building because of this latest problem. And at a time, Stephen, when we're constantly hearing, particularly from the Department of Health, that it is asking for more resources and it needs more money to meet spiralling costs. When, on the other hand, we have within the Royal Victoria Hospital and on the Belfast Health Trust, hemorrhaging money from various buildings. And don't forget that we've also reported on the mental health building on the City Hospital site, which also has experienced problems in the past couple of months. And we haven't even started to talk about the Children's Hospital. That's another building, and work on that hasn't started, and it is already behind schedule.
Well, when was it supposed to start, on the Children's Building?
Last year. And it hasn't started, and now the new
Why
date
not?
For it's, well, it's the same contractors that have been involved in the maternity hospital that has been reported before. And, you know, questions are being asked, why is there a delay? And also money has already been spent on redesigns. And my understanding is that with building work, costs change, costs go up. So if a design is delayed by maybe 1, 2, 3 years, there's often a redesign, and that redesign will come with new costs and additional costs.
Mary-Louise Connolly, thank you very much. The DUP MLA Dan Dodds, who was on with us yesterday, expressing concern about all of this. Well, here's another new concern, Diane. Are there, morning to you.
Good morning.
Are there penalties drilled in to, if the building is not open, whose fault it is and who's charged for it? Or is it the taxpayer every time?
Well, you know, Mary-Louise is absolutely right. This is an issue about providing up-to-date, state-of-the-art facilities and taking away a very old building that is not really anyway fit for purpose, and providing, because it's also not, it's a maternity unit, but it's also the neonatal centre for Northern Ireland, where our premature and sickest and most vulnerable children are looked after. So it is about providing really good health care, and we support that. We will always support that. But it's also an issue of how we spend public money, the governance within the trust, and the accountability of for what actually has happened. And that's not just within the trust. After yesterday, when I raised the issue, and I've been raising this for some weeks now, Stephen, this isn't a news story. I've been raising this in written questions for some weeks, and the department has been drip-feeding the answers out to those written questions that I have asked. I have asked in my written questions who was responsible for the handover of the contract, and the Department of Health, and I've also asked what role did the Department of Health play in handover of the contract. Department of Health have been very quick to come back and say we had no role, but they haven't said who was responsible within the trust. So we're waiting on some more of those answers as they come in. But it's about governance, and it's about accountability, not just within the trust, but within the Department of Health. When a minister stands up in an assembly and tells that assembly, the scrutiny body of the executive, and tells that assembly that he only found out about this issue on the day of the debate.
Yesterday.
Yesterday. Then we have got to ask, what of his officials? What did they know? But did the permanent secretary know? Why was the minister not told? This is clearly a substantial problem. I don't know the extent of the problem. I genuinely don't know that. And I was speaking just in the corridor to the minister yesterday. I don't think they knew the extent of the problem. But it can't have been just discovered at 8 o'clock yesterday morning.
So this is the medical,
the minister said when he was confirmed.
This is the medical gas pipework. And the very and the very fact that was disclosed to the minister yesterday, it must have, it must be material. It couldn't be something which can be fixed in a day, or Mike Nesbitt would be saying that don't worry, it'll be fixed in a day. It couldn't be. So he's finding out about this yesterday, as you say. What on earth is going on within the Department of Health, within the Trust? What is the information flow? And is something going to be put right so this doesn't happen again? This is our maternity hospital. Doors shut, not open. And no timeline, by the way, Diane, as I'm sure you've noticed, as to when this medical gas pipework will be fixed. No timeline at all.
Well, to be absolutely fair to the minister, I think he was almost shaking with rage yesterday. That this was sprung on him in advance of a really important debate, and where he had to give account for the issues that have already been uncovered in relation to the maternity hospital. You know, that doubling of the initial cost of the maternity hospital. And again, as Marie-Louise says, as time passes, regulations change, redesigns have to be done. We add in cost after cost after cost in relation to that. But also, Stephen, remember, we are also looking at the rebuild of the children's hospital. Now, there are many parents in Northern Ireland, like myself, who understand the conditions in the children's hospital, who will have sat night after night on a chair at the side of their child's bed or slept on the floor on a mattress, where children are in wards that are just, you know,
how bad is it?
Long overdue. So we need a new children's
Dan,
hospital.
Dan, how bad is it? What is it
well,
like?
Well, we know that the cost of the children's hospital has doubled. We know that that has doubled, that it's estimated.
But what's the building like, I mean? What's it like, the old building?
Well, I haven't been in it in a while, personally, but it is still essentially the old building that has been there for years, decades and decades. And we need that new children's hospital, and we need parents and families to be able to stay together if they need to do that, because many of these children, it's also a regional children's hospital, not just for Belfast. Many of these children come from all over Northern Ireland because that is where their service is situated. So if it's the regional haematology service or heart service, those parents and families will stay a long time and possibly within the hospital. So we need all of these facilities. But we now know that the cost has doubled. And really, we now need to be asking questions about how sure are we that, you know, that we've the right governance in place, that when we come to the handover of the Children's Hospital, now estimated to be 2030, that we won't have the same problems again.
So the Belfast Trust have told us the following in terms of the new maternity hospital. This is what they told us yesterday towards the end of the programme or shortly after it. They said, look, the water systems, Belfast Trust has commissioned an independent review into the water systems in the maternity hospital. They've recently received an interim report. Well, what does the interim report say? They're not telling us. The minister's not telling us either. We should go back and ask Mike, does this interim report, does it give the prospect of we're close to a solution here? We're close to this hospital opening. But the Belfast Trust, they say they've recently received an interim report from the independent experts. The Trust is currently reviewing the findings and recommendations in light of the clinical risk assessments for all services planned within the building. Well, look at how that's worded. Recently received. What's that? In the last few weeks? many months ago? Doesn't tell us. Trust currently reviewing for all services planned within the building. This review is essential to ensure the trust has the necessary assurance that they'll be able to safely deliver services within the new building once any proposed remediation works are completed. Following this clinically led review, the Trust anticipate being able to advise the Department of Health and Health Committee of the next steps for the building. So again, how long's a piece of string? This is just them anticipating being able to tell Mike Nesbitt and the Department of Health next steps. No indication here for that maternity hospital as to when it's going to open. None.
Well, let me put some timeline on it for you. When this emerged in late June, I wrote to the minister. And I wrote to the minister, presumably the early part of July, and I got a response back at the very start of August, which said all of this was going to happen. So this has been ongoing from that period of time. Just yesterday morning, an answer, another drip feed answer to the various questions I've been asking. Just yesterday morning, I received an answer from the Department of Health. And the question I asked was, how many water outlets in the building, in the maternity hospital, are impacted by Pseudomonas, which is a really dangerous pathogen in water supplies? And I asked how many outlets. And so the answer came back literally yesterday morning that it indicated that 459 different water outlets within the building were impacted, and that is 36% of the total within the building.
Over a third.
Yes. That's a really significant. And I will be surprised if it's only that. And I'm no expert on any of this. But what I am looking for in the middle of all of this is accountability around public money and accountability for those who actually took the actions, as Marie-Louise said, to take the contract on this basis. Now, I am looking forward to the fact, and I spoke to the chair of the Health Committee yesterday, and the Belfast Trust will be recalled back to the Health Committee, where hopefully we can have a considerable amount of time to ask many, many more of the questions that have arisen.
Have any of us got a clue when this maternity hospital is opening?
No. I really don't know. And if the minister has only been told on a drip feed basis as well of the problems within the hospital, I fear for it. I hope it is opening soon, because our mums, our babies and our clinical staff and those who work there deserve to work in state-of-the-art facilities.
Nuala McAllister from the Alliance Party joining us this morning as well. Nuala, it's quite simple, isn't it? When's it going to open? Who's accountable for it not opening? Who's paying the extra charges while it's not opening? Are there any penalties in the contract? Is it the contractor's fault or not? All of those type of questions, I guess we've got to get answered.
Well, you'd think it'd be that simple, wouldn't you? I mean, we've asked some of the questions at committee and some of the answers that we have received. We have now had conflicting information from the department compared to the information given by the Belfast Trust. So we are very concerned. We know in particular the oversight mechanisms of the testing of the water. Now, that might not seem like a big deal, you know, in terms of who's doing what and carrying out what water testing. But, you know, if we're getting conflicting issues on smaller, if we're getting conflicting information on small bits of issues ongoing, then what other conflicting information that we're getting? A lot of the time, to be perfectly honest, we're not getting very much information. Now, we did last time we asked.
Well, there's the health minister.
Well, the health minister was there in chamber. And I will say the health minister was there in chamber yesterday, and he did seem absolutely enraged that he was getting a drip feed of information. However, he still voted against the motion. I thought was the absolute point of that.
He still what?
He still voted against the motion to hold a full independent inquiry into what has gone on with regards to the maternity hospital, which I thought was utterly bizarre, because I think it's important that that might be the only way that we can get the full transparency of the situation. Because as Diane said, we do now have the build of the children's hospital that needs to take place. And I have actually been inside the children's hospital. I've been inside it every year since my child's birth. We've had unfortunate inpatient stays. And I remember one point sitting there and thinking, this is the exact same ward that I stayed in as a child. There's not, you know, very little's changed.
Well, someone's calling me saying in the children's hospital that his wife works in the children's hospital, and there are wires hanging from the ceiling and things. Was that your observation or not?
Oh, yeah, no, I have observed that. I have observed that. I observed holes in the walls as well. I have observed, you know, the grouting. I've observed walls that are missing in places. And to be fair to the staff, they're absolutely excellent. And even small things like bringing the children toys, you know, they have to rely on donations. And they're often quite old toys that get donated to the children's hospital. And they absolutely do the best what they can at the facilities. I know myself, I slept in a chair for every night that my child was in, because you don't leave your child. You don't want to. And it's just potluck, really, if there's availability for parents to actually stay there. But with regards to what's going on at the maternity hospital, we absolutely cannot. Of course, we can't have handover until we actually sort out the issue of the pseudomonas, particularly because it contributed to a number of infants' deaths a few years ago. So we understand that. But the last time we were told was that handover could be expected in July of next year. And goodness knows when handover is actually going to take place. But the problem is that it's not just this issue. And yes, of course, we know that it can't be handed over until that issue is dealt with. But yesterday we learned about the medical gas supply issues. We don't really know what that means, how extensive it is. We don't know how long that will take. We have had now since then, we have actually been in touch. Someone reached out to us, contractors, with regards to the medical gas issues. Now, they were not the ones that carried out the construction or any of the work at the hospital, but we're very interested to hear what they say so that we can ask. Trust some information.
Dan Dodds, can I ask you, is it standard for these type of building projects that there are penalty clauses to any contractor if they are, I'm talking in generality here, if they don't hit a target build date? Is it standard for Stormont to do that with its contracts or not? Do you know?
I genuinely don't know. And the contract, in my understanding, is between the trust and the contractor. So I genuinely don't know what the legal terms are within the contract and so on. The trust seemed to have gone ahead. In answer to my questions, it is indicated that the contract has already been handed over to the trust, and therefore there will be issues then around the liability for the issues that have arisen.
I don't understand what you mean, sorry. What do you mean the contract's been handed over? What do you mean?
In other words, the trust have already taken the building. It's their building now.
So like the builders essentially have left the ground
and they've handed
the keys over to the trust.
With pseudomonas in the water and the gas supply not working.
So then, yeah. Well, apparently,
that is my understanding. That is my understanding of it. And I really do think that we need the trust back at the committee so that we can verify all of these issues. As I say, I have been asking questions about this. If you look at my written record of questions to the minister over the last number of months, you'll find dozens in relation to this. They're very carefully answered. It's difficult from written answers to piece together the full story. So when they come back to the committee, it will be the opportunity for the committee to ask all of these questions.
Look, I'm the total amateur in this, and I haven't sat on these committees like you two have. But is it feels like a basic. Before you build a building, or certainly before you get too far into it, that somebody somewhere checks the water supply. Now, is that a stupid amateur thought of mine or what?
No, not at all. We were told, I mean, of course, before handover checks have to take place on various different systems, not just water supply, you know, on a lot. We were told at committee in, I think it was September, that with regards to the pseudomonas, that it was the trust's own group that were carrying out, you know, checks. Because if you remember from the news a number of years ago, Stephen, whenever this did break out and it contributed to the death of a few infants, then there were mechanisms put in place across all of our hospital estates. to actually check that on a regular basis.
Lula, what I'm asking is, before a brick went down, could they have checked the water supply for Pseudomonas? Or should they have done? Or does that not is that not fair to them?
Well, I can't answer as to whether they checked before the building works completed or, you know, started. I'm not sure if that is.
Well, why wouldn't you?
But they do have ongoing checks in their other buildings, so it would make sense that if they're checking all of the other buildings that they already have on a regular basis, that where does the water supply initially come from? Because I'm sure on that site, because you remember on that site you have the Children's Hospital and you have the main Royal Hospital, that were, I'm sure, the water supply at some stage is shared, and when it gets through the pipes, there do have to be checks. Now, remember, they are checked at the water taps as well, as not just, you know, within the main supply, and that's perhaps maybe one of the reasons. Again, I can't answer for them.
And then in terms of confidence in Stormont, so the Nolan Show leads with this at 9 o'clock yesterday morning. And someone somewhere, presumably within the civil service, says, oh, I better tell the minister that there's a problem with the medical gas in there. Like, how many people driving along in their cars at the moment, sitting listening to this, will feel that that's synonymous with a proper functioning government? Oh, the gas doesn't work. Like, you couldn't make this up.
Stephen, it's really important to say that the minister made it clear in the House yesterday that he was only told about this yesterday
morning.
Absolutely,
that's my point.
But in his department, he has a health estates service. So they look after all of the buildings and they plan for new buildings within the system. So there are questions that do need to be answered by the department. I mean, if you were the minister now this morning, you'd be going in and demanding who knew what, when, why was he not told, etc., etc. And this, I mean, I don't know the extent of the problem. I genuinely don't know the extent of this problem. Yeah. But this is just a combination of a series of missed opportunities to actually get the thing right. And civil servants or members of the trust holding on to information instead of acting.
And you say the minister found out.
That's appalling.
You say the minister found out at 8 o'clock yesterday morning. Obviously, we weren't on air till 9. However, we were sending questions in the day before. Yeah. I'm sure Mike Nesbitt will be asking himself. I'm sure he will. You know, how was he not told about this? David, morning to you, David.
He has a right to be very angry.
Morning, David.
Morning, Stephen. How are you?
Go ahead.
No, I actually spoke to you, Stephen, back in February 2021. What I spoke to you about then was the Children's Hospital and why, basically, there was never a story done on it. And Diane Dodds, you know me very well, she's my local MLA, and Diane has actually been pressing the Health Committee to try and find answers of where this new Children's Hospital is. But I just find it again incredible that hours before a debate that the minister is finding out the issues with the hospital. That hospital has lay empty for 2 years. It was supposed to be open in May 2021. I remember taking my son Adam on a walk around the hospital when he was actually allowed out on his wheelchair, and we stopped with the builder and we were asking questions about the maternity hospital. We said, when is it due to open? And he said May, and this actually was the beginning of May. And we said, we're in May, and he says, yeah, but it's due to open at the end of this May. That's May 2021. Stephen, we're now in November 2024 and people are only starting to ask questions. I raised the point with you at the time. People in this country need to get their finger out. There's staff, there's world-class staff working in third world conditions, and that might sound...
What is it like in that children's hospital?
Well, Stephen, as I spoke to you, we spent 33 months on and off the haematology ward, and again, the staff were incredible, absolutely incredible, but it's cramped, Stephen. There's not enough space. There's kids with cancer who are having to share communal toilets. And this isn't on the staff or anything. It's just not made. It's not built for purpose.
Ultimately, it's the children we're letting down and the mums who are having children. That's who we're letting down.
Yeah, well, again, I can't speak for the maternity part. You know, I was only ever in the main children's hospital. But, you know, I know there's... the listed part of the building, there's wards up the stairs and there's tiles blown off the walls. And
those
tiles can't be replaced because it's a listed building. And, you know, don't take my word for that. Go down and do a story. I pleaded with you back in February 2021 to run with this story. And up until yesterday, this is the first time I've heard it in your show.
Well, that's my bad. That's my bad. You know, I was reticent until Nuala confirmed it of reading out this note I have from one of our listeners. They have a relative works in the Children's Hospital. She's told me time after time again about wires hanging from the ceiling, unfinished ceilings, missing tiles. Surely not.
Do you know one of the other issues, Stephen, actually, and I think that actually the staff are wooed, I mean, whether they would be allowed to or not, because it is a Belfast Trust run, is another question. But actually, see, in the emergency department itself, and this one's quite shocking, whenever we had a visit to the emergency department, and unfortunately I've had to have many visits over the years with my kids, but whenever we did it as MLAs, and one of the things that they showed us was this little cupboard space. And it was decorated beautifully inside, and it was filled just with kind of cabinets and all sorts of equipment that could be wheeled in and wheeled out. And I asked what that room was, and they said, that's the room that we use to bring families into to tell them the worst news that they will ever receive, that their little child
And it's a cupboard. Is that what you're telling me?
And it's a cupboard. But that's not the worst of it, Stephen. I said, this is the room that you have. And they said, that room was funded by a family who lost a child, because whenever they lost their child, we didn't have anywhere private to bring them. I mean, that's shocking. That is shocking that a family then, you know, they actually fundraised to just get that little space that they now, you know, whenever an incident like that happens, they rush to remove it, and they take such care with the children, I must say, like they really do. But they find it just heartbreaking that they have to do that, that there isn't this, they don't have a space. They also don't have space. And I've seen it. It's almost like a small cubicle that they have made for children who are undergoing severe mental health crisis, who are harmed themselves. Well, look, they do not have a safe space for them. I mean, that's just another shocking.
Well, look, surely this is something. Surely this is something you can all work together, work with the health minister to sort down, right?
Stephen, there's absolutely no problem in working together. And there's no problem, and I think that there's a real appetite in the Health Committee, not just to work together on this issue, but actually to work together to make Northern Ireland's health service the best that it can be, and to make that transformation. And we will work with the Minister, but we need to know. We need to be told. We cannot have a situation where a minister comes to the Assembly and said, I'm sorry, guys, but this is the first time I heard about this, and this may or may not be significant and very, very costly for the health service. So we need to know. And it's really important. And you heard David and Sarah spent a long time with Adam in hospital. And it is a really, really important for both clinicians and staff, and also parents and children who are being treated, have the best facilities that we can provide.
We're getting quite a lot of people contacting us this morning, 03030 80 55 55, nolan@bbc.co.uk. Just want to ask you both in a second about the row over the Ulster banner, and then we'll let you go. Stay there for one second for me. Here comes the news. Look, our thanks to Diane and Nuala for staying with us for another couple of minutes, because I just want to get your feel for this row now over the Ulster banner. The chief executive of the Commonwealth Games has said that it's not something that they want to be associated with. This is the Commonwealth Games ANI. Said the flag never had any, Conal Heatley said the flag never had any official status and had been placed in the homes of ethnic minority people as part of a bid to force them out. Sorry, and that is what he does not want to be associated with, not the flag, but people being forced out. And he thinks that there should be a new flag, which is appealing to everybody. Let's have a listen to how your leader responded to this, Diane Gavin Robinson, this morning on Good Morning Ulster.
I think that last comment was an appalling comment to make. I remember there being a protest in front of City Hall during the summer on race issues, and a gentleman was holding an Irish tricolour, yet I don't hear such political commentary in that direction. And I think in Northern Ireland we have recognised over many years that sport unites people. And yet here we have somebody who is charged with encouraging success through sport, engaging in politics in the most unhelpful way. I don't think this is a good initiative on his part. I don't think this assists in sport, nor does it assist in bringing people together when this chief executive appears to believe it's his role to pick scabs on identity. There are people in Northern Ireland who have the proud ability to showcase their talent, be it for Northern Ireland at the Commonwealth Games, Team GB in the Olympics, or Team Ireland, and they do that without any thought whatsoever about constitutional politics, and yet here is a man charged with promoting sport, engaging in that discussion. He should leave it to politicians.
Thank you very much indeed for being with us, DUP MP and leader Gavin Robinson.
Well, that's Sarah Brett speaking to Gavin this morning. The breaking news since that interview, Diane, that we have established is that the chief executive has now spoken to the PSNI because he is concerned for his personal safety, and he says some of his personal details have appeared on social media. So we need to be careful here, do we not?
Well, first of all, it is deeply regrettable and wrong that anybody should have concerns about their public, about their safety. And I hope that he gets the appropriate advice, help, and everything that he needs to have assurance around himself and his family. It's wrong, 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 and I would never stand over that for one second. However, if we go back to the issue of the Ulster banner, I am really, was really excited by the fact that in the summer, we had, and after the Olympics, we had celebrations which included those who, in both the Olympics and the Paralympics, competed for Team GB and competed for Team Ireland. They stood on the same stage together. They were cheered by the same crowd together. I attended some of those in my own constituency here in Upper Ban. And it was really, really inspiring and important for young school children to see that. And I don't really understand why a body charged with looking after sport, is now trying to pick at the issue of flags, knowing that it is such a contentious issue.
Because he doesn't feel, presumably, he feels that there is a different flag that could be welcoming to all.
Well, I think what he should do is focus on what he is supposed to do, and that is sport, ensuring that Northern Ireland has the best opportunity to compete within the Commonwealth Games, ensuring that we maximise the opportunities of those games coming to Glasgow. Just yesterday, those suggestions that we look at the issue of could we not bring hockey to those games because of the real expertise and interest in hockey across Northern Ireland. So I think he should stick to sport, leave the flags alone, and allow us to get on with being the best that we can be in terms of sport. But it is never right.
What's wrong with having a more inclusive flag, Dan?
Well, I do believe that the Ulster banner is inclusive. I mean, I don't see the issues that he is seeing.
Do you, Nuala?
Excuse me.
Do you see the issues, Nuala?
Well, I mean, with regards to just because you say something is inclusive doesn't mean that it actually is. And we have had, now not myself, but my colleague David Honeyford has had contact with people who have said that they don't feel that it is inclusive. But, you know, nonetheless, they have participated, but there have been some who have chosen not to. Now, we can't just say stick to sport, because, you know, part of it is about representing who you're representing, your nation, your country, region, you know, whether it's Europe or it's Northern Ireland, Ireland, or the entirety of the UK. It is about that kind of greater sense for a lot of
people. So do you agree with them that the Ulster banner should be replaced?
Well, I do believe that if we could have something that would be representative and people would be feel more comfortable with and would be inclusive, that yes, that actually could be facilitated. However, the realist in me knows that we're probably not going to get something that suits everything, and so the Ulster banner will be the default flag. Does that mean that it's acceptable that everyone should just automatically feel that that's, you know, okay for them? No, we should give people the right, and they do have the right to feel whether it is inclusive or not. But
what's not inclusive about it?
The realist in me, well, this is what people are telling me, and I can't tell people how to feel, Stephen.
But you feel something yourself, and you're a prominent politician. Does that flag feel inclusive to you?
In terms of the people that I have spoken to and my colleagues have spoken to.
No, I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about you. Does it feel inclusive to you?
Well, I don't believe it is inclusive, to be perfectly honest. I don't. However, it isn't an issue for me that would be one of my priorities of, you know, kind of sorting out and
sure. Do you think it should be replaced?
However, I do think that if we could find a way for a flag to be more inclusive that is representative of everyone, that we should do it. But as I said, Stephen, I'm a realist, and I don't think that's going to happen.
Dan?
You know, so there is a way that we could perhaps, is there something else that we could do to make more people feel included? Then maybe that's something that should be examined.
Final word to you, Dan.
Well, I think that the chief executive should stick to sport. He should continue to try to make Northern Ireland the best that it can be.
Well, athletes feeling that that a flag is inclusive or not is part of sport, is it not?
Well, there are many of us who feel that the Ulster banner, that very ancient and traditional flag, is inclusive. It embodies the place that we live. It embodies the place that we love. And it's important to keep it. And therefore, I think that that is right and proper.
Okay.
And as I say, we have always celebrated all of those who come from Northern Ireland who want to play for whichever, whether they want to play for the Republic of Ireland or for Northern Ireland. We have always celebrated that success. And in fact, actually, I was in Portrush recently and I noticed a wall mural of Shane Lowry. How inclusive is that?
Dan Dodds, thank you very much indeed. What do you mean by that? What about Shane Lowry?
From the Republic of Ireland. He's on a wall mural in Portrush.
He won the
symbolizing,
Open.
Symbolising the
Portrush.
Open. And yes, and I thought that that was really, you know, sort of a bit symbolic of where sport is and important.
Hold on a minute. Do you think that, are you against Shane Lowry being in that mural?
No, not at all.
All right, you support
it's
it.
A good thing.
All right, okay. Sorry, I thought you were saying it wasn't a good thing.
No,
there.
No, not at all.
Okay.
But I think it's symbolic of how we embrace people who do well in sport and enjoy their success.
Look, there's so many talking points this morning and we'll get you on air, Dan. We'll let you go. Thank you. Nuala, before you go, then the assisted dying vote, of course, on Friday. It's not applicable to Northern Ireland, but MPs will be voting on it in Westminster and it may influence, who knows, a momentum here in the future. Mm-hmm. What way would you be voting? You're not voting, but what way would you be voting if you were?
So first of all, I would be supporting the bill. I have over the years examined various jurisdictions across the world, from Canada to Switzerland, Spain. You know, because it is something I feel quite strongly about because of people that lobbying me. I do believe the safeguards in the 6 month period for a terminal illness, the fact that it has to be self-administered. I do think that we have to give people that dignity in death, and it is something that I feel quite strongly about. In Alliance, it is a matter of conscience issue because it is life and death. I don't see that it's on the agenda anytime soon in Northern Ireland, but as a person who wants I think that it should be. However, I wouldn't like to see is just having polarised debates that don't actually mean anything in terms of commitments that we have. I most recently actually spoke to someone who who was suffering from motor neurons and was worried about like what life would actually bring to them in the end. And that one thing that this bill won't do is for people who have, you know, a longer terminal prognosis, that is that 6 month prognosis. So people saying that, you know, I understand with this debate is very difficult for some people, and I wouldn't want to speak critically of anyone who supports it on either side, because it is difficult, Stephen, it really is. But whenever I speak to people who just want to have that dignity in death at the end stage of their life, who am I to say that they cannot have that?
Well, what you are is someone that should equally be thinking, surely, of protecting those people who are coerced into doing it.
And absolutely, and there will be protections for that in this piece of legislation. Now, one thing that I was concerned about, and I have expressed, is the issue, because I was a carer for my elderly grandfather for quite a long period, and that's an area that I would be concerned about regarding coercion, especially when it comes to the care of people who have disabilities or elderly people in particular, and that is an element that needs examined further. But whenever we look at other jurisdictions, for example, you know, there's one state in America, Oregon, that it was one of the first across the world to actually implement assisted death in terms of the aspect of coercion. That was examined quite deeply. It's the same as
and are you saying you're concerned about carers coercing someone to take their life? Is that what you're saying?
No, not at all. I don't know where you got that from, to be honest. What I'm saying is, as someone who has cared for someone in the past, my worry was that people, especially those who are cared for, almost feel like they're a burden.
Okay.
So that was something that, that was a concern that I have.
I see.
But with regards to this bill is so limited in what it would actually do. Now, I do share concerns from others that it should not be a private member's bill. Okay, I don't think it should be a private member's bill. It would be better if it came from government and they had more kind of scrutiny behind it, but also more ability to carry it out. However, that would still not prevent me from voting for this bill should I have been in the position where I was able to do so.
Nuala, thank you. Morning to you. Nigel's in Castle Welland. Morning, Nigel.
No, Stephen, I don't want to be too long-winded. It's just about the Northern Ireland flag and the Commonwealth Games. And
we're now telling you that the chief executive of Commonwealth Games Northern Ireland, this is new, says he's now spoken to the police because of his concerns for his safety.
That's unbelievable. That's absolutely shocking, because what that man has said is 100% correct. And that flag might...
Well, Gavin Robinson has described what he has said as appalling.
Well, Gavin Robinson is just wrong in this. And I'll tell you, because I have direct experience of having travelled internationally with a group of mixed young people representing Northern Ireland team at a world championship, where the organisers accidentally used that flag to highlight our, you know, where our team should sit and so on. And it caused a bit of an incident, because the reality is that flag, and we can respect their views on it, that flag represents the Protestant Unionist Loyalist community. And they have an affinity with that, and that's fine. It does not represent all of us that live here in Northern Ireland. It does not represent all the people who compete in sports in different teams in Northern Ireland. And the failure to recognise that is actually astounding. I'm astounded. You know, Dan Dodds and Gavin Robinson are smart individuals. They've been in politics a long time. They surely know that the use of flags and symbols and emblems can be and is used in a very divisive way. I said our experiences was almost funny, because the organisers of the event had just Googled Northern Ireland flag and they put that flag up on the dining table. And then later that evening we were at the opening ceremony and they presented us with a large flag on a flagpole, and we couldn't march behind it, because everybody recognises and understands what that flag represents.
But because some bad actors have used a flag to intimidate people on occasion, that can't lead the way, is the prevailing reason why a flag can't remain, can it?
No, the issue is the flag isn't inclusive. It has no official standing. And in fact, it represents the past. It represents the Protestant Unionist Loyalist community. And I respect that some people then might fly that flag on their houses or or wear T-shirts and shirts with it. It doesn't represent everybody. Mr. Heatley is 100% correct, and it's appalling that he's faced such horrible criticism, and now it seems like a threat to his safety. Appalling.
Well, commentator, former special advisor Brendan McGrew with us this morning. Morning, Brendan.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Colonel Heatley, the chief executive, who has said that we should consider a different flag. He's now telling the Nolan Show that some of his personal details have appeared on social media, and he's approached the police over concerns for his safety, Brendan. Place are we living in?
That's a very unfortunate development, Stephen, and maybe that goes some way towards showing the role or the influence that flags, no matter what way you come at it, still unfortunately have in our society. Personally, you know, I don't get hung up on flags. Whatever represents Northern Ireland or Ireland, I'll support them in whatever sporting stage that they're on. But it's a demonstrable fact, Stephen, that flags provoke emotions in people, and what's called the Ulster Banner does not support or does not gain any attachment or emotional support from the nationalist community. Anyone who tries to argue other than that is simply denying reality, and therefore it gives us an issue. You know, it's many years ago now since the Flags and Cultural Identity Commission recommended a new civic flag could be used to represent everybody in Northern Ireland. It's still not too late to go down that road and come up with something which does make everyone feel more included. The flag which is currently used for Northern Ireland athletes at the Commonwealth Games, it does exclude, it's just a fact, it's just a demonstrable fact that it excludes certain sections of our community. There's no point denying that. And wouldn't it be better, therefore, if we all...
Well, the leader of the DUP is denying it, and he's describing these comments as appalling.
I don't know if he's denying the fact that some people don't feel allegiance to it.
Well, some people don't feel allegiance to, you know, their own underpants in Northern Ireland. Feeling allegiance in Northern Ireland, you can never get the right... There is no right answer to that, is there?
Well, why not? Why could there not be, Stephen? Why could, after the agreement, for example, maybe we're 30 years too late with all of this, could there not have been a civic flag, which is now being recommended by the body which was established by the executive to look into the issues of flags and cultural identity? That body, about 5 years ago, recommended a new civic flag be designed and used to represent us all in sporting and civic life as well. Why can't we go down that road?
Mick Fieldy, editor of Slugger 2, you can see from Gavin Robinson, Dan Dodds, the two DUP representatives' reaction, it's not going to happen.
No, and actually what we have in Northern Ireland is a culture of complaining without ever offering any solutions. I don't disagree with what Brendan and Nigel have said. You know, that's plainly obvious to anybody with eyes to see. But, the idea is that the Northern Ireland flag is unacceptable because it's associated with demonstrations from the far right. Well, that's just what happens to any flag. You know, look at the association of the tricolour with the anti-immigrant demonstrations in Coolock, Dublin. You know, we've seen the Union flag used in similar circumstances over in Britain. You know, what is the position of the Commonwealth Games? Are they saying that we should just get rid of the flag and put a white flag up in its place? Whatever Northern Ireland's shortcomings are, and they are legion, we're not Russia. There's no point in replacing it just with a white flag. If we're going to do what the Commission recommended, let's get on with it. But
here's what Mr. Heatley told the newsletter. Northern Ireland does not have a unique identifying flag. And it was then put to him that the Ulster Banner is a unique flag, albeit one without official status. Yep. And he said, therefore, Northern Ireland does not have a flag. It's not the official flag of Northern Ireland. That is the Union flag. And using the Union flag to replace the Ulster Banner doesn't work, he said. Not for any political reason, but simply because the Union flag also could represent England, Scotland, Wales, Jersey, Guernsey, Isle of Man. It does not uniquely identify Northern Ireland, he said. Look, let's continue talking about this, Brendan. I know you need to go. Mick, you're going to stay there. Lots of calls in this today. 03030 80 55 55. We'll pick this up after the news at 10. Good morning. It's all happening this morning. Another breaking story now about Commonwealth Games Northern Ireland.
They've told the Nolan Show that they've now been forced to close an office pending a security assessment after their chief executive has suggested the union banner be replaced with a design that Stormont comes up with. Let's just look further at what Mr. Heatley, this is Conal Heatley, who's gone to the police himself about about his own security concerns since giving this interview to the newsletter. He says, this is his copy to the newsletter, not for any political reason, but simply because the union flag could represent England, Scotland, Wales, Jersey, Guernsey, Isle of Man. It does not uniquely identify Northern Ireland. He said, this is nothing to do with us. This is a failure of government. The Ulster banner was the flag of the old Northern Ireland government, not of Northern Ireland, but of the government until 1973. The current flag of the Northern Ireland Assembly, therefore the government, is the flax flower. So if you're going to use the flag of a government, our question would be, should we not use the flag of the current government rather than a government from 50 years ago? I don't think, says Mr. Heatley, that's an unreasonable question to ask. When he was asked why not keep the status quo going by the newsletter, he said, because the question has been raised on numerous occasions, but this is what obviously we're seeing, one side of the community or certain people within one side of the community making comment now. My question, says Mr. Heatley, have they been oblivious to what some people in the other side of the community have been saying for the last 50 years? We want to get away from all of that and we want something the politicians of Stormont can agree. Well, Mick Fealty, this story now very much gaining more momentum. They've now, we can report, the Commonwealth Games Northern Ireland being forced to close an office pending them getting a security assessment.
It's ridiculous, Stephen. I mean, if we can't have a civil conversation about something that, you know, maybe not 50% of the population, but let's say 40% who vote nationalist, clearly have an issue with, then I think we're still in trouble. We're carrying over old habits from the Troubles that absolutely need to be gone. This is just ridiculous. There are important issues tied up in with this, and it's not simply to do with identity. It's to do with the lack of agency in Stormont. Yeah, because to generate enough political capital to come up with a flag that would replace the Ulster banner, which is actually the Northern Ireland banner. The Ulster banner actually is a yellow background and a red cross with the same red hand in the centre, and it represents the old nine county province. But if we cannot make progress on infrastructure, health, housing, education reform, then, and even paramilitary culture, which you know, there has been no anti-sectarian strategy developed. All of these things are symbolised by the fact that that these guys can't even get together to improve the economic development beyond the motorways that were built by the old unionist government, the M2 and the M1. Economic development pretty much runs out at the end. East Tyrone is prospering. West Tyrone is in an absolute basket, as is the city of Derry. In a way, it kind of symbolises that stasis that we've seen for the last 50 years since that unionist government ran out of steam back in 72. There are depths to this. I think that run pretty deep and are indicative of this culture, as I say, where everybody likes to complain about problems, but nobody comes up with a solution.
James in South Down. Morning, James.
Hello.
I'm just looking here, James, at more of what Conal Heatley has told the newsletter. We'd love politicians, he says, to sit around a table and think of a better Northern Ireland, a new modern Northern Ireland, and say, let's come up with a new flag. This is not, he says, eating away at anyone's identity. It's about the reverse. What we're trying to do is make sure, as a sporting body, we're open to everybody. As soon as Stormont has agreed on a flag, we will use it the next day.
as soon as we get it, we will use it. So the appeal is to the politicians. What's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong with the old Northern Ireland flag, which was called the Cross of St. Patrick? A white background with two red diagonal stripes on it. It's known as the Cross of St. Patrick.
Well,
that has been the Northern Ireland flag for a long time.
Well, as you know, where we're at the moment is you've got the likes of Gavin Robinson, Dan Dodds, the DUP. Let's see what others say. It's about taking this flag away from it. That's now the issue, isn't it?
But I'm not talking about the Ulster flag now.
I know.
I'm talking about the St. Patrick's Cross, which is part of the Union Jack. Union Jack's made up of the Scottish flag, the English flag, and the Northern Ireland.
It's been a
flag.
Long time since we get into a whole row about flags and what's on them and what's not. Peter in Carrickfergus. Morning, Peter.
Well, Stephen, I don't see anything wrong with the flag we have. It's funny whenever these situations arrive, it's obviously somebody from the, I don't want to call them niceness or Catholic side, comes up with this bright idea. I wouldn't, I'm not the brightest person in the world, but I know not to go on social media or whatever he's done and come off a sudden so...
Who?
You know, people's going... Yeah, the guy that's the Commonwealth Games boy, he should have left the
room. Conal Heatley.
Well, Conal Heatley tells me everything.
Well, doesn't tell you anything. It tells you he's in charge of a sporting body that wants to be open to everybody, and he's asking Stormont to come up with a flag that will appeal to everybody.
Well, the flag of the halves, all right. Don't see any difference.
It's not all right to some people in the community. It's all right to you, Jack, but not to somebody else.
Well, if it comes on TV, Rory McIlroy, and it comes up a tricolour or an Irish flag, or, you know, it doesn't annoy me. I don't sit and not go to sleep. It's just people getting involved with things. Didn't surprise me, New York.
Would you compete
Keeper.
Under the tricolour, would you?
Aye.
You would?
Aye. Why not?
No problem.
No problem at all, no. It's only a new flag.
So you think this Ulster banner should stay to represent people of all backgrounds in the Commonwealth Games?
Yes. What about England? He was talking about, you know, you were talking earlier on about rats and all, and Northern Ireland and people fear. What about England? When they were fighting England, they had the Union Jacks out and King George's flags. So what do you do? It's not compatible with the Indian community, the black community. So they don't represent it. Liverpool.
Sorry,
don't
what are you talking about? What's not compatible with the black community?
But they don't really recognise the Union Jack.
Are you actually insane?
No.
Are you completely insane? Let me tell you, Indian people, born and bred in Northern Ireland, in the United Kingdom, black people born and bred in the United Kingdom are as British as you. You complete and utter moonbeam.
Well, I'm glad you called me out there.
It's just offensive, isn't it? It's just offensive to suggest the colour of someone's... I'm not even debating it, right? So you can stay on the top of this. I am not debating because someone has a different colour of skin doesn't mean that they're not as British as you. Wise up. Now, you can stay on to talk about this if you want. Paul's in Andersonstown. Morning, Paul.
Morning, Stephen. Dear, dear, deary me. Oh, dear. Look, I think what Conal Heatley has done is right and proper. He's brought this into for a wider debate.
He now feels he's under a security threat, and Commonwealth Games NI have had to close an office pending a security assessment, we are told, by them. Mm-hmm.
To be frank, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. Look, as an Irish nationalist Catholic, I grew up, someone who grew up during the conflict, that flag represents to me unionist domination, unionist supremacy, and unionist terrorism. That's what that flag means to me. I mean, I care less about the Union flag than that particular symbol.
What particular symbol?
That, That Ulster banner, as it's called, the Ulster banner, to me, that's, I've just outlined what it's synonymous with. And, you know, if you ask any Irish nationalist Catholic, they're not going to be any different from me. So the fact, I mean, I would like, maybe your caller, your last caller, if he could muster a sentence to tell me how that flag represents someone like me. Which part of that banner represents me as part of this community? How does that represent me, that flag?
So what flag would you have to unite everyone?
Well, that's down to politicians. There have already been recommendations put forward to the politicians. That's up to the people in Stormont to come up with that there. But frankly, that flag at their flag now at the moment is offensive. Frankly, offensive. It's a glorified England flag with a crown and a red heart on it. It's offensive, synonymous with unionist terrorism.
Well, that's how you're interpreting it. And you know that many, you know, anybody living in Northern Ireland can have their own interpretation of any symbol, can't they?
Of course they can, Stephen.
And therefore, does there need to be a bit of give and to and fro?
A wee bit of give and take. Tell me how that flag allows for give and take for someone like me. Someone with my background, someone with from the areas that I'm from. Tell me how that flag with give and take represents me and people like me. It doesn't.
What does people like you mean? What are you? What do you mean?
I just outlined I'm an Irish nationalist Catholic. So I would like someone to tell me how that particular flag represents me and people like me.
Mick Fieldy?
Well, I mean, it goes back to the thing I said at the outset, which is, you know, we can all see what the problem is. And if we're all honest, we know what the problem is. 40% of the population have an issue with it. But as I've said very clearly, this lack of cooperation at Stormont on really basic things that are uncontentious, that should be for the benefit of the whole community of Northern Ireland, we have made very, very little progress on the motorways, the two motorways, the M1 and the M2, both symbolise that stasis. Those were completed over 50, nearly 60 years ago under a unionist government, and nothing in the last 25 years has really gone to improve all of that. And the people west of the ban are paying the price for that, mostly in the majority Catholic, nationalist, Republican communities. And this power-sharing government has failed them on that.
I'm looking back to 2016, 8 years ago. The government's been asked what consideration has been given to adopting the cross of St. Patrick as a unity flag for all communities representing Northern Ireland. The question was asked by a Conservative MP. The NIO responded, saying the issue of flags in Northern Ireland was a sensitive and complex one. The Stormont House Agreement included a commitment to a commission on flags, identity, culture and tradition. This was established in June, he said at the time. That's 8 years ago.
Yeah. Look, it's complex. It is complex. And symbols are important. You've heard the emotions of people phoning in this morning, so I don't underestimate that. But personally speaking, is a new flag the priority for people in Northern Ireland? Would they rather see the health issues gripped properly? You know, you've heard that well on the programme this morning. Infrastructure, educational reform. There's a whole bunch of things that are sitting on Stormont's in tray that are not so complex, and certainly not complicated, although difficult to fix.
I went back to 2016. Then a a report dealing with flags and culture published 2021, 3 years ago, and it looked, among other things, at flags. And it said, the report said a new civic flag was discussed. It would not be a regional flag or a national flag, but rather a civic flag that would be designed to be representative of the diversity of our society, it said, including our new communities. However, guess what? The working group was unable to reach consensus on the proposal and said it hoped political and civil leaders could progress the issue. Well, that hasn't happened.
No, no. And unless somebody comes up with a solution and it's put to a test, it's not going to happen. Look, you know, Conal Heatley has raised a legitimate question. You know, he'd be looking at participation. He'll be looking at blocks of participation. Whatever the politicians say on your program, in good faith, I'm not complaining, but that is a legitimate issue for the chief executive of the Commonwealth Games in Northern Ireland to be raising. It's an absolute scandal that he cannot raise it without having having a lot of people jump down his throat and without us even being able to have a civil conversation without him feeling physically threatened. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's a real problem, but we don't really have a real solution. And it's typical of Northern Ireland that we'll dance around the handbags of a problem without anybody offering to pick it up and come up with a decent solution.
Mick, thank you very much. Morning to you. Tom's in Belfast. Morning, Tom.
Morning, Stephen. Just listen to this wee debate here. I'm wondering what people think about the Protestants, the Unionists, the British soldiers, Unionist politicians who have represented Ireland playing rugby and sports like that and playing underneath the tricolour. Nobody ever raised about that. They're getting changed to make that feel more inclusive for them. And one of your spokesmen or representative just said that he felt that the Union flag or the Ulster flag, whatever you want to call it, represents hate and loyalist terrorism. I'm a Protestant Unionist, and a lot of the terrorism that was visited upon the people of this country by Sinn Féin IRA was organised and indeed funded and armed from the Republic of Ireland. So people could turn that around and say, well, I look at the tricolour and think that.
Well, Sinn Féin, of course, would say they're a political party.
Of course you are. And they said the IRA didn't murder Jean McConville. We all know all that, Stephen. Nobody believes none of it. But the thing about
you don't.
No, I don't. And I'll tell you, and tens and tens, if not hundreds of thousands.
So what should we do? Should we have a new flag or not?
Personally, I wouldn't care what flag to put under.
Well, clearly you do.
No, I don't, Stephen.
Would you have an objection? Do you support Mr. Heatley in saying that Stormont should come up with a new flag so that it's more inclusive?
I would support Mr. Heatley if he said that Stormont come up with a flag for the sports teams here and the Republic of Ireland should take away the tricolour.
So clearly you do care about a flag.
Stephen,
you only
Stephen,
want the Ulster banner replaced if the Republic of Ireland replaced theirs, don't you?
Stephen, I would be happy to play it under none, Stephen, because a flag doesn't pay somebody's electric bill at the end of the week here, Stephen.
Okay. Now, Dr. Dominic Bryan was chair. That report I told you about in 2021, Commission on Flags, Identity, Culture, Tradition. Dr. Dominic Bryan was the chair of it. Morning to you, Dominic.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And here was me, you know, suggesting that you lot couldn't come up with agreement, a consensus. Listen to our calls this morning. Is it impossible to come up with a consensus around a flag?
Well, I think you're right. We did on that issue. Other issues, we came up with consensus on that issue. We didn't have a consensus. There was quite a few of us, and I count myself among them, who were very keen on an alternative flag, but there was no consensus amongst the political parties. I think listening to some of the things that we said, what's important to say here is that however much some people passionately love the Ulster banner or the Northern Ireland flag, whichever way you want to call it, it doesn't work as a symbol for everybody in Northern Ireland. And you can't get away from the fact that because of its history, and it's got quite a short history, actually, it doesn't really work in that way. And I suspect that's why the Commonwealth Associations are not keen on using it.
So are you standing square to square with what Conal Heatley has said, Dominic? Do you support and agree with what he's saying? Stormont should come up with a new flag for the Commonwealth Games.
I do think it would be a good idea to have a new flag. I think it would be a good idea to have something that could represent everybody. And here's something to think about. I would have thought making something that represents Northern Ireland well is something that unionists on the whole should be supportive of going forward. I totally understand what they feel about the past and the use of that flag. But if we're to make Northern Ireland work, you have to find ways of bringing people together. And I think that is a good reason for finding an alternative flag.
Have a listen, Dominic, to what Gavin Robinson, the DUP leader, told. It was Sarah Brett he was speaking to on Good Morning Ulster this morning. This is after Conall Heatley said to the newsletter that the flag never had any official status and had been placed on the homes of ethnic minority people as part of a bid to force them out. And, quote, that is not something we want to be associated with. The DP leader described some of Conall Heatley's comments as appalling.
I think that last comment was an appalling comment to make. I remember there being a protest in front of City Hall during the summer on race issues, and a gentleman was holding an Irish tricolour, yet I don't hear such political commentary in that direction. And I think in Northern Ireland we have recognised over many years that sport unites people. And yet here we have somebody who is charged with encouraging success through sport, engaging in politics in the most unhelpful way. I don't think this is a good initiative on his part. I don't think this assists in sport, nor does it assist in bringing people together when this chief executive appears to believe it's his role to pick scabs on identity.
And yet, Dominic, you agree with Conall Heatley. Gavin Robinson clearly doesn't.
I tell you what, there's one bit that Gavin Robinson says there which I'd sort of agree with, when he says that the tricolour is also problematic. He suggests that. And I think that's very true. And I think the Union flag, the tricolour and the Ulster banner have things about them, the way they're popularly used, the way they've been over the years connected with paramilitarism in different ways, the way they're used, makes them quite difficult symbols to use to bring people together, all right? The answer is, do we come up with something new to try and represent something which doesn't have that past attached to it that people can all associate with?
So does that mean...
I'm not saying that's easy, but I'm saying it may be.
But here's where we cut to the chase. So does that mean, if we come up with something new, does that mean this Ulster banner, Ulster flag, call it what you will, is for the dustbin or for the shelf or not welcome in this part of the UK at any sporting event?
Do you know what? No, because people who feel it's their flag and have an association with it can continue to use it. People have rights to use these flags. And so I'm not suggesting in any way that that flag is banned or anything like that. That's not helpful at all. The reality is, what job do you want it to do? And I suspect the Commonwealth Association want it to do a job which they don't think that Ulster banner can do anymore.
We asked the police about Conall Heatley approaching them about his personal safety. They've basically given us a line which says no comment. It's all wordy, but it says they're not commenting. Malachy in Belfast. Morning, Malachy.
How are you doing, Stephen? Yeah, I think the caller you had on from Understand is 100% right. I would class myself as an Irish Catholic nationalist, and that flag is a blatantly sectarian loyalist flag. It's used by paramilitaries and loyalists to intimidate Catholics.
Yeah, but it's also used by people who aren't paramilitaries and who aren't intimidatory in any way.
Yes, but that flag, if you go to any estate around Lisburn or Ballymena or anywhere, any building site, that flag is hoisted. Now, what that means is we only want unionists to move in here. And if you're a Catholic living in a mixed area, which I have had friends, and this has happened to you, you know about this, the Cantrell Close incident, put the Ulster flag out, or possibly put the Loyalist flag out, or get out of your house. And these people were asked to leave their houses.
But you then see people,
they wouldn't fly them.
You then see people like Rory McIlroy with that flag wrapped around him. And all Rory's thinking about is sport and pride in his country and pride in all of the years it's taken him to get where he is.
It is an absolute total embarrassment to watch Rory McIlroy, from my perspective, with that flag wrapped around him. Because that flag, to me, like your other caller said, represents loyalism and intimidation. It is not inclusive. Let's be honest. And for Kevin Robinson and Dodds to come on and say about the appalling remark that Conal Healy made, Conal Healy's absolutely right. It's still to this day put on estates and houses where loyalists only want unionists to move into. The man is 100% correct.
Okay.
How can a nationalist represent Northern Ireland, which I have no problem a nationalist doing, but stand under that flag?
Malachy, thank you very much. Thank you. Well, you can see the division right at the heart of this, division of opinion. And I'm sure we'll continue talking about it here in the BBC. See you tomorrow. Thanks for your company today.
The biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet at Stephen Nolan. Stephen Nolan Show!